Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
I guess we should probably mention that actually Fred and PFW, they won't be back until a week from today because we have to do Patriots Monday next Tuesday, with next Monday being a travel day back from London for the team.
Good call.
Right? Isn't that right, Eric?
I think that's right, yeah. Our producer, Dr. Dvorkin, is shaking his head yes as well. So
Fred said, see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, I think
no,
it's a week
No, see you
from
next
today.
Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Eric, how's it going lying. Today?
Pretty good, John. Thank you.
Excellent. Welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday. I think this is still Wednesday. John Rook with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. We're going to jump right into it here in just a couple of moments. Stephen Holder, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the St. Petersburg Times, he's going to join us here shortly. And then in the second hour of the program, the one and only professor from ESPN and ESPN.com, NFL senior writer John Clayton, is going to join us in the inside the playbook as well to get his thoughts on the Pats and the Bucks and everything through 6 weeks of the National Football League season. So that sounds like it'll be pretty good today. And then, of course, tomorrow I got to hold down the fort for you guys after you're done today, since you're climbing on a plane. What time do you depart?
Let's see. We get on buses in the early afternoon.
Okay.
And like we do on a normal road trip. And then we sit around there for a little while. Then we go to the airport and have to go through some sort of
security
there. So by the time we actually shove off, it'll be early evening.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. Sounds about right. It takes a while, especially going overseas, and you got to check passports and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So.
And then we'll be there bright and early on for breakfast with the Brits.
That'll be exciting, though. It'll be exciting. Have you been over to London?
I've been to Heathrow for stopovers, but
okay.
I've never been into London proper.
Well, you're going to love it.
It's excited.
Actually, yeah. Do yourself a favor. Get the full English breakfast.
What does that entail?
A little bit of everything. Full English breakfast.
I mean, what are we talking? Eggs, bacon.
And then you get the baked beans with it, which is also pretty cool. And don't forget the blood pudding.
Oh God, I don't know if I can. I can handle that, John.
See, now everybody who's listening in the UK is basically laughing their ass off right now.
What is there real blood in there?
Well, yes.
Is it like a hot dog where you don't want to really know what the
yes,
ingredients are?
That's exactly right.
I hope they have a continental breakfast. I'm looking for some Cheerios and some pancakes and oatmeal.
No,
maybe,
no. Do yourself a favor and go have
scones.
You know, the English muffins.
Can I get some scones? Please?
Yes, go have a scone and go have the scrambled eggs and go have the bacon and you need to do. You have to do as the townies do when you're in Rome. You got to live as a Roman. So
we're going to London. So here's what I'd like to do. I'd like at 4 o'clock to have tea.
Okay.
I'd like to do that.
Then you should definitely do that. Oh, by the way, I should also
mention
here that Nick Szczepanik, and I think that's how he pronounces his last name. We'll find out here shortly. But Nick Szczepanik from the London Times is going to join us here in about 20 minutes
well. Very good.
So we're gonna
perspective from across the pond.
We have to. Don't you feel like we kind
of
have to?
Of course we do. Of course we do. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the latest on practice today? What can you tell us in terms of in light of the all the cuts and the rumors and everything that was going on around the clubhouse yesterday?
Well, the most obvious thing, John, was that 3 days ago we were playing in a driving snowstorm.
Yeah.
And as New England weather is so typically mercurial, we were playing today under sunny skies, mid-60s. It felt, like late summer, early fall, instead of midwinter like it did the other day.
Yeah, I just looked at the temperature gauge outside, 74 at my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well,
it's unbelievable.
It felt pretty well. It was a warm breeze. It was nice out. It's complete opposite of what we had the other day. And that's the way the weather is here.
Stunning.
And it's kind of, I think, the way it is in England, where it's unpredictable. Every day you get sort of a mix of everything. We can ask our friend Szczepanik, if that's how he pronounces it that way. But as far as on-field stuff, they were in full pads. Five players were missing, one of whom was kind of a surprise. We had Julian Edelman, who reportedly broke his arm against the Titans and will be out for we don't know how long.
Yeah, the Boston Herald actually reported that last night on their blog site.
Right.
I was going to ask if anybody knows anything more about that today, by your estimation.
Not that we know of, and Bill was not asked about it directly at the press conference. The reporter from the paper who broke the story sort of asked and sort of mentioned the name Edelman and in a roundabout way roster moves, but Bill really didn't get any direct questioning about it. And
okay.
Not that he would have answered it anyway. But
which makes the move, you know, at wide receiver cutting Joey Galloway all the more curious.
Curious, and also, I mean, there's something needs to be done before Sunday as far as a roster move. They can't go in with just three receivers, healthy receivers. They need somebody, and whether that's practice squad, whether it's a player I'm going to get to in a minute here. But so Edelman was out. Taylor and Morris, the two running backs, were again out.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Light, who hurt himself against Denver, was out still. The only questionable one here was Darius Butler. He wasn't there for the start of the workout. We were speculating amongst the media that maybe he's being allowed to go to Connecticut to pay some respects for his former teammate.
Right.
But we don't know anything for sure. Maybe he could have even been out there later. We'll find out when the practice report comes. I mean, injury report comes out later this afternoon, what the extent of his participation was today. But he was not there for the opening of practice, so we can only speculate right now on why. The two guys whose names have been coming up a lot more frequently lately, Mark Lavoie, the backup offensive lineman, and rookie receiver Brandon Tate, were both out there in full pads. Their clock started yesterday as far as coming off their respective lists, PUP
and
NFI.
21 days?
Yes, 3 weeks. The Patriots have 3 weeks to let them practice and within that time make a decision on whether or not to activate them or put them on IR or part ways with them. So given Matt Light's status and Lavoie's a tackle, and given what we just talked about with Edelman and Galloway being released, it seems like there'd be a more urgent need for potentially both of these guys to be activated by the weekend.
You would think so.
You would think. There's at least more of a possibility than there was, say, 2 or 3 weeks ago that these guys would get any sort of immediate action coming off their first availability, coming off the their two lists. But there's also the name Terrence Nunn, who's the rookie who had a great preseason. His name keeps coming up. He's been on the practice squad. He's been involved in the system for all this time, and he's actually been at practice, whereas Tate, this is the first time he's actually been able to practice as a Patriot since being drafted back in April because he's been on the non-football injury list, which is basically the similar rules as the PUP. And you know, he was drafted in the third round, Tate was, with the intent that, you know, knowing that he was coming off this knee injury that he suffered at North Carolina for the future. And I really, you know, going into this year, had no expectation that he would play any role with this team this year. I expected him to be on IR, and, you know, we'll see you next summer.
Right.
Good luck with your rehab. But now, all of a sudden, we're entering week seven, and it looks like he might be needed right away, which is, I think, a lot to ask of a rookie. I've said that from the beginning, especially a rookie who hasn't, you know, who's only had classroom time and mental reps. He hasn't had physical reps with, you know, timing with Tom Brady on the field and, you know, knowing where he has to be as far as reading coverages and defense and knowing his assignments on the field. I think it's really a lot to ask of a guy, but they're kind of backed into a corner here and they're going to have to do something. They might be better off activating Nunn and or Tate as opposed to bringing somebody in who would have to learn completely from scratch and be expected to play on Sunday.
So. Yeah, I can't imagine that. I mean, you know, if they were going to make a move, I thought it would have had to go by 4 o'clock yesterday, which leads me to believe that
they're going to go
with Tate and maybe even to a lesser extent Nunn, you know, on the you know, PUP and the practice squad, that they would be relatively satisfied with those two guys coming in since they do know the playbook.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that we have to consider too is not just at wide receiver, but you can't just say, okay, well, you know, we'll just go in with our two or three guys and we'll run the ball because you have significant injuries at running back now, too. And you'll only have, you know, two main ball carriers active. You'll have Kevin Faulk as well, but he's, you know, it's at this stage in his career, he's not really the every down back that you can sort of turn to.
Right.
He's always been that third you know, out of the backfield option as a receiver mostly on third down, you've got Maroney and Green Ellis who would have to carry the load. So it's not like they're in a comfortable position on offense going in. They've got their left tackle who's out. They've got a rookie starting there. They've got two receivers now who've gone down or been released, and they need to add some depth there. They have two of their top running backs who are out, and they need to rely on the two younger guys. So, you know, they put up 59 points the other day, and they're playing another bad winless team this Sunday. But, you know, I say they get out of this game with a win, however much they win by. The bye can't come fast enough. Get some guys healed a little bit. Figure out what we're doing on offense. It's a lot of questions going into this game, John.
Yeah, very much so.
More than I expected.
Yeah, very much so. I also wanted to get your thoughts as well on Adalis Thomas, because I know he was interviewed for the first time earlier,
yep.
I guess, today.
Yes.
Following his inactivity. And, you know, I couldn't really – you can't really tell by the tone of his voice whether or not, you know, he's upset or if he's trying to, you know, take the high road like so many Patriots veterans and so many Patriots players have done in the past. I have a hard time getting a read on it, and part of that is only because, you know, he basically deferred most of it and, you know, and said, you know, one of his answers to a particular question was, well, you'll have to ask Bill. He's got all the answers.
Did you hear it or did you read it? Did you
well, read it in transcripts? I both.
Okay.
I heard it, then I went online, and I read it, and then I went online, and I heard it.
Okay.
And it was a cut that I found from WEEI, because they played a cut of it a while back as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, was he being flip?
Well, I was there for the whole 6.5-7 minute interview. And
good.
And,
then
I was
let
standing,
us know what you think.
I was actually standing right next to him,
okay.
So I had a great vantage point. I could hear everything clearly. It's not like I was stuck in the back, as sometimes, you know, you're just the luck of the draw when you show up.
Great.
I happened to be in a pile of reporters interviewing Rob Ninkovich, whose locker is right next to Thomas's. So as soon as Ninkovich was done, Thomas happened to show up. So I just happened to, you know, switch the microphone from my right hand to my left, and I was standing right there. I got a perfect opportunity to hear everything clearly. My take on it was that I think he reacted as well as could be expected under the circumstances, and I think I would have probably reacted the same kind of way. There were times when he was really taking the high road and biting his tongue, and there were times where you could tell that his frustration got the better of him, and he answered in a somewhat flip manner. But I can't say that I blame him, because if I'm a starter like that and I get, you know, surprised at the last second telling me I'm not even, not just not starting, but not even dressing for a game, I can understand where there's some hurt feelings. And I think he handled it about as well as could be expected, especially considering that he answered question after question after question after question that were basically the same question, which was, you know, are you upset? Are you going to handle this well going forward? And, you know, his response was, I'm a professional. I'm here every day. I do what's asked of me. And, you know, a couple of times, yeah, he was a little flip and saying, you know, go ask Billy, has all the answers. But I think that's to be expected of a player of his stature, who's a veteran, who's been around this long, who gets blindsided by something like that. You know, he was also asked directly if this was a motivational tool that he thought maybe Bill was trying to get him riled up or something, and he said no, he didn't buy into that. But I think you could tell just by the tone of his answers that it had that effect. He's
sure.
Clearly motivated.
Good.
He's clearly motivated.
Well, I think
that
would be music to every Patriots fan's ears.
But whether or not that's, I mean, whether it, two things. Whether or not that's true, I think that's troubling, because if you need a guy of his supposed caliber to be motivated after 2.5 years, that's a troubling sign. It's troubling to me that a guy needs to be benched in order to be motivated. He should be motivated enough to do that on his own.
See, here, Eric, I would argue that I think everybody in every walk of life, that goes for me, for you, for Fred, for Andy especially. I mean, every once in a while, everybody needs to pick me up. Every once in a while, you get complacent in your job, and it's really through no fault of your own. Sometimes you get so close to the forest, you can't see the trees. You know what I'm saying here?
Right.
And I think you need a little, you know, I don't want to say it's an attitude adjustment, even though it may be that. But I'd say sometimes you just kind of need to clean the slate a little bit and clear your head and try to get back to, you know, what you originally, you know, came to a particular job, you know, that you were supposed to do. And I think Adalis Thomas had kind of lost some of that.
Well, you might be right. I'm just saying, from the day he got here, the expectations were that he was going to be this phenomenal playmaker who was able to do all kinds of different things on the field, and we haven't really seen that from day one. And if we start seeing it from now on because of this catalyst, my question is, why hadn't we been seeing it before then?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that troubles me. If we start seeing production out of him now, why did it take his having been to be benched 2.5 years later for us to finally see the results of what we should have been seeing? If he's capable of doing that, why does he need to be motivated to do it? That's my question.
That's very true. All right, let's hold on to the thoughts about Adalys Thomas there for a couple of moments and switch our gears to looking at the opponent for this Sunday at Wembley Stadium in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Stephen Holder covers the Buccaneers for the St. Petersburg Times, and he joins us here inside the playbook. Stephen, it's John and Eric. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. How about you guys?
Pretty good. Great. Thanks.
Great. Thanks for asking. And are you preparing yourself to go overseas?
I am. I will be leaving town tomorrow to head over. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a nice experience.
Well, I was just going to ask, do you think this could potentially be a nice experience for that football team that you cover?
Well, it could be memorable from an off-the-field standpoint. I think given last week's result in New England, I think it has the potential to be a not-so-memorable experience on the field. But, you know, it does, however, give them an opportunity to maybe challenge themselves. I think, anytime you play a team that's in a groove the way the Patriots are right now, you certainly see that as a personal challenge to you. And I think that's the way a lot of these young guys are looking at it. And they are young guys for the most part on this team. So, I don't know that they go into this game wide-eyed and in awe of the Patriots per se, but I do think they certainly have their work cut out for them. And I think that the spread in this game is probably an indication of that, as you can see.
Sure. Let me ask you the obvious question then. Why is this team 0-6?
Well, you know, what I've settled on is my stock answer, and I don't mean to say it's a dumb question. What I mean is that there are so many different reasons you can point to, but what I think it boils down to here, if you really weed through all the other stuff, is this. You have a team that's in the midst of a great amount of transition here. Okay, and then we're talking about transition from the top down, head coach, offense, scheme-wise, okay, defense scheme. We're talking about players playing in positions or in schemes that they weren't drafted to play in or acquired to play in. So you're talking about a lot of transition all at one time. And I don't know whether they bit off too much. You could make that argument. But they really are building for the future, and they thought in order to go the direction they want to go and to get to where they wanted to go, these were some things that they felt were changes that were needed. Now, I can certainly understand that. I just think that, you know, you could argue that when you undertake that kind of overhaul all at once, it does have the potential to become problematic for you, and it's not going to be a quick fix.
You know, going into last week's game, I don't know if you saw any of the Patriots-Titans game, but the sort of consensus going into that game from those of us who cover both teams was that the Titans were a team that had basically given up on the season already, even though it had only been five games in at that point. Do you get that sense at all from this Tampa Bay team? I know they're winless, but do you get the sense that they've given up hope for this season?
No, I wouldn't say it. I mean, I do see as whether it may be hard to believe, but I do see some fight in this team. I will say that for them. They really went down to the wire last week against Carolina. They probably should have won that game, considering they were at home, had the momentum late in the game with an interception return for a touchdown to tie it. They had everything going their way. So I saw some fight there. I saw some fight up in Washington. They probably should have played or probably should have won that game. They, in my opinion, outplayed the Redskins for most of that game that day. They really got very little from their offense that day, the Washington, and the Bucs defense was really the reason for that. So, you know, and I've seen some great individual performances as well. Akeem Talib, the second-year cornerback out of Kansas, he had a 3-interception game. In the past 2 weeks, he followed that up with a shutdown performance of DeSean Jackson in Philly, and last week against Steve Smith of Carolina. So I can point to some examples where I see some fire and see some some things that are going in the right direction. Given all that, however, the schedule the rest of the way is not friendly for them, and it's going to get harder to keep this all in perspective and to keep focused on the goal at hand. So I certainly understand that argument when the team's 0-6 that it can appear that they have given up, and they're certainly it would be understandable if guys did, I suppose, under the circumstances in this league and the amount of pressure that are on teams to win.
Steven, how has Raheem Morris accounted for himself? I realize 0-6 is a bottom-line result, and that's not great, but what do the players think? What are the fans, what do the media say about Raheem and what he's at least attempted to do in his first year as a head coach?
Well, I think the players are behind him, and I think here's why. Because now if he were an outsider who came in here to coach this team and they started 0-6, I think you would see some factions in the locker room probably start to separate themselves. But he's been with this organization a long time, 7 years in some capacity. And, you know, so these guys had relationships with him before this. So he doesn't have any there's no fracturing there just yet. But what I think you have from the fan base is two camps. You have one camp that believes that this is probably a job he was not prepared for at 32 years old to take over an NFL mm-hmm. team and be a first-time head coach. And, yes, that's a lot to ask. Then you have another camp who says, well, let's wait and see. You know, Tony Dungy started 0-5 his first year. And for very similar reasons, they really came in here as a staff and tried to overhaul everything, change the defensive scheme and change coordinators and what have you. And it didn't work at first. And eventually things had to take hold and they got hot and they finished the season very strong and the rest was history. So I think a lot of people believe, well, it's too early to really judge this guy when this is the same team that finished last season with, 4 straight losses. So, you know, not all of this is on him, I think a lot of people believe, but it's very difficult to have patience when you're talking about 0-6 and you're talking about a team that has lost a couple of games in a lopsided fashion. So the Bucs have really got to give people a reason to keep hoping and to keep believing that they're on the right path here. And it's been very difficult, I think, for people to hold on to that so far.
Steven, you mentioned Aqib Talib before, and I know that one of the strengths of this Tampa team, at least from an outsider's perspective over the years, has been their defense. And they've lost one of their staple guys, Derek Brooks. How has the defense changed or adapted without him in the lineup?
Well, you know, they played this Tampa 2 defense here for so long, and they still play some of that in the secondary, the cover 2 coverage and what have you. But they are trying to get they're trying to build a more physical defense here as opposed to one that's built on speed. Not that they don't have speed or want speed, but I think they want to emphasize some other things as well. So that's what they're doing right now. The problem is they really haven't had a chance to retool all the personnel, and that is really what that requires for it to work. I think they do have – well, Aqib Talib is a – to bring him up again, he's a perfect example of a guy who fits this scheme. They want to play bump and run coverage on the edges, on the perimeter, and he's a guy who can do that. He's long, he's a very good cover man, and he's physical, so he does a good job with that. The problem is, on the other side, you've got a Rondé Barber, who I think has exceeded people's expectations in this scheme, but even for a veteran like him, you're asking him to do something he's never done before. And you have a lot of that. To his credit, Rondé Barber, I think, has played it better than most expected. But you have a lot of guys who are not necessarily making the adaption to what they're being asked to do in this scheme as well as some of the other guys. And that's where you have missed tackles, guys out of position, and what have you. And when you have those kinds of breakdowns against the talent in this league, it's going to be a long day for you. So I think those are the kinds of things you have to be willing to live with when you overhaul a system the way they're doing right now. And up front, I think, the front four, they're going to have to retool that a little bit. They're not getting enough of a pass rush for a team that wants to play this style of coverage in the secondary. You've got to get to the quarterback if you're going to have your cornerbacks isolated like that. And so it's all got to work together and cohesively, and it's not doing that at the moment. And I think that has a lot to do with having the right personnel. Not, that doesn't mean these guys can't play. It means that they're going to have to retool this a little bit. It's going to be a work in progress, and this year is about finding out who can and can't do it.
Sure. Let's flip it over to the other side, because obviously there's some names on the offensive side of the ball that I know fans will certainly be familiar with. I mean, Kellen Winslow seems to have had a pretty good start to his season. Carnell Williams, who's a good story, coming back from knee injury. Although I understand B.J. Askew and the accident he had recently, it looks like he's going to be done for the rest of the year. Antonio Bryant, a name. Jeremy Trueblood, Jeff Fay on the offensive line. And yet you have Josh Johnson at quarterback. And so I would ask you, at least from a fan's perspective, why Josh Johnson?
Well, frankly, he's a young guy that they don't know a lot about. Certainly the rest of the league doesn't know a lot about him. Well, this team doesn't know enough about him either. So I think when the Byron Leftwich experiment, when it was decided that it was time to move on from Byron, they went to Josh Johnson as opposed to Josh Freeman, who was their number one pick this year, because he does have a year under his belt in this league, understands how to prepare for a game and install a game plan and all that entails for a quarterback. And from a standpoint of just being an NFL quarterback, they felt like Josh Johnson had a better understanding and a better hold of those sorts of concepts than Josh Freeman. That doesn't mean Josh Freeman isn't talented. It just means that he's not there yet, or they're not comfortable with where he is. And certainly it's the toughest position probably in sports to play and prepare for. So you could certainly understand why that is. So if they're not comfortable with putting a 21-year-old kid out there, he came out early as a junior, remember. He's very, very young, very, very raw. I think for all those reasons, they decided, let's go with a guy who's got a little bit of mileage on him and maybe a little better understanding and have some upside as well. Very versatile player. They've split him out wide at receiver a couple times, for example, even before him taking over the quarterback job. So he's very quick, a very good runner, and throws a good ball. But his problem has been, I think, in the face of a pretty fierce pass rush, getting through his progressions and getting the ball down the field. He can find his tight end or his running back maybe for the check down, but he can't necessarily on a consistent basis get it to his receivers down the field, and that's where the frustration has come in. I think that's why you see Kellen Winslow has been such a great option for him, because he really does a great job of getting open, particularly against zones or even against one-on-one coverage. If he's got the right matchup, he can really exploit that. So he's been a wonderful addition for them at tight end. He's just not getting enough help to really get the one-on-one matchup so that he can get down the field and get in the end zone for them. But they've got to also, another point I would make, you mentioned Kalike Williams, they've got to run the ball consistently, really, as every offense. This offense was built around the run, and the whole idea was get a running game going and then kill you with the play action. The problem is they haven't been able to do that consistently in running the ball, and that had a lot to do with losing their franchise center, Jeff Fain, who just got back this week, and we did see an improvement in the run game. So I think injuries certainly played a part. They lost the center, Fain, like I mentioned. They haven't had their three-man rotation at running back, really, except for one game. So that hasn't worked out as planned. And the change at quarterback really has kind of derailed some things when you're playing with such a green guy on the center. So, that's going to affect your passing game, and that's where they are now. They're just trying to work through some things.
Sure. Great stuff. Very thorough. Stephen Holder again with the St. Petersburg Times covering the Tampa Bay Bucks. Stephen, thanks for spending a little time with us today. Safe travels overseas, and when you get to London, be sure to order the full English breakfast.
Oh, are you trying to get everybody to do
breakfast.
This, John? Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to jot that down, guys.
Full English breakfast.
Go with the scones.
Absolutely. When in Rome, you got to do as Romans do.
The tea and the scones, Stephen.
What's that?
Go with the tea and the scones.
All right. Hey, that's great. I got something out of this.
There you go. Thanks, Stephen.
We wanted. Good deal.
You got it. Safe travels.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks. You bet. Come on, I gotta pass on the culture.
Do you have stock in this British breakfast thing? What are you doing over here? The blood pie and all this stuff? My God.
Blood pudding, get it
whatever
right,
it is.
Will you?
I don't know.
he might like it. You never know.
God bless him if he does.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, and again, coming up shortly, Nick Sebanek, and I guess we could be butchering his name, but we think that's how he pronounces it here, from the London Times, is going to join us to get the English perspective of this game on Sunday. But one of the things, you know, when you look at what Tampa has done so far this year, Eric, fact is that, you know, the last three games, maybe you could kind of throw the Philadelphia game out. But, I mean, you know, they lose by 3 points at Washington. They were actually in the game for a while against Philadelphia on the road. And then, you know, they were in the game very much so with Carolina and lost it 28-21 this past Sunday.
Right.
So when you take a look at what they've done, you know, the game at Buffalo, I mean, the game with Dallas and the game with the Giants, which were both pretty good, you know, whippings, you know, you could see where this team could easily have one, two, or even three wins thus far. So comparing them to what we've seen or what we saw with Tennessee this last weekend, I don't know that 0-6 teams, I mean, record alone, yes, they're comparable, but I don't know that these teams really are comparable.
Well, I think Steven put it best when he said that he's seen some fight in those Buccaneers.
Right.
And I don't think people have seen much fight in the Titans.
No.
So I think that, and you're right, they've had some close games that they maybe should have won, including the most recent one against Carolina.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if they came, you know, to London and rolled over the way the Titans did the other day. That said, I still think the Patriots will win. I don't want to say completely easily, but I think it'll be a comfortable enough win.
Were you surprised at the 14-point spread?
No, not really.
Yeah.
No, I think that's probably about right.
Even for a neutral game?
Even for a neutral game, yeah.
Yeah. Technically Tampa's home game, but
yeah,
we all know it's not,
you know,
really going to be that way.
Right, and it's really going to be more of a – we're expecting it to be more of a Patriots home game as
right,
far as the
right,
crowd is
there's
concerned.
There's a very large contingent of Patriots
sure.
UK fans that we know of. Yes,
sure.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, I think Tampa will give it a more spirited contest than the Titans certainly did, and it's
right.
And it's hard for any team not to give a less spirited effort than the Titans did.
Well, that's,
I mean, you know, I think some Giants players.
That's true.
Giants players were talking about how the Raiders rolled over against them a couple of weeks ago, and they hadn't seen anything like that before. Well, if they had watched this game against Tennessee, I think they were pretty evenly matched as far as not giving it their best.
Right.
But then Oakland came out the next week and beat the Eagles.
Yeah, so that's why I kind of throw it out there. Let's take a timeout here, and then we'll come back and visit with Nick Sebanek from the London Times and see if we can't get the English perspective of this game and what the fan base there, what NFL fans, you know. I really believe it's great to look at a story from the other side of the page, so to speak, and in this particular instance, other side of the ocean. So we're going to do that. And if you're a UK Patriots fan and you're listening to us today, do send us email. webradio@patriots.com is how you get in touch with us, and let us know your thoughts. How fired up are you? What you think that the local media is treating, how they're treating this game, what kind of buildup there is amongst American football fans in London. Definitely want to hear from you, and I've got some that I want to share with you already a little bit later on in the show. But if you're out there and you're ready for, you know, the National Football League to come to London and you just can't wait, today's your day. webradio@patriots.com. We get back to the playbook in just a moment.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots Instant Game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots Instant Game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Welcome back inside the playbook. John Rook, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. And now we're going to head overseas. We're going to go to, I guess, a place where originally we all started at some point in time in our family's careers. But now the National Football League is going to get over there this Sunday. And Nick Schepanek is with the London Times. And, Nick, we appreciate your taking the time with us. I know with the time difference and all, it's early evening for you there. But we want you to know that we really appreciate your spending a little time with us. And we're interested in the U.K. perspective on this football game coming up Sunday at Wembley Stadium. First of all, how are you today?
Pretty good, thanks. Overworked and underpaid, as we all are. But, you know, how is it that a guy with a surname like Scalavino came from England originally?
No, I think we came a little bit further south, I think.
Further south and a lot warmer.
Further south and a little bit warmer, yeah, exactly.
Well, Nick, I can tell you that my family surname, Rook, is from England.
Yeah, mine is from Poland, but there you go. I mean, it's a little bit, yeah.
We all came from the other side of the ocean, though, on this side. Anyway.
Absolutely. So what's the buzz been like? How is the media treating this? Is it a big event?
Well, it is a big event, but it lacks the novelty factor of the game 2 years ago, which was, you know, the first regular season game to be played here. It's kind of almost part of the calendar now. We sort of assume that it's October, therefore there will be an NFL game here. But I think people who follow the NFL are kind of excited that the Patriots are coming over. You know, that's a big statement by the National Football League. And, you know, to have a team that's won three Super Bowls in this decade, you know, to be over here, that I think will be taking the game, you know, up another notch. I've spoken to NFL executives over this side, and, you know, they see this as the game really where, okay, they've established that they can hold the event, you know, the event will work, the teams won't be inconvenienced, and now they're looking to take it on and build. And I think, obviously, having the Patriots as one of its competing teams this season will be part of that.
You know, Nick, a question I have for you as a resident over there. When you think of football, or what we call football, you call American football, you know, you see other sports like baseball, basketball, hockey even. Those are games that, you know, a lot of people around the world play as youths, and then that sort of gets them interested and excited about college and professional level sports. What are the opportunities like for young UK citizens, children who might be interested in the game, or are there youth leagues there for kids?
There's flag football. There's a thriving college league over here. You know, there are over 40 college teams playing, which may not sound very many, you know, in United States terms, but, you know, that's something that I looked into a couple of years ago, you know, when they started over here, and it was a source of some amusement to me that the one of the most radical campuses over here, you know, which was at the forefront of feminist movements, now has cheerleaders, you know, and
oh,
so
wow.
That was, you know, it's there, you know, if people want to play, there will be a club in their area, possibly affiliated to a college. There'll be, you know, a way to get in at a sort of entry level,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, people can you know, play the full game, you know, as early as they're ready. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think that people looked at the way soccer eventually began to take off, you know, as a participation sport in the United States and
right.
thought, well, you know, that obviously is the way to go forward and get people playing as young as possible. But obviously it helps when, you know, people can bring the very highest level of the game over and say, you know, not only are you going to, you know, play flag football or touch football, but we can go and see, you know, the New England Patriots play at Wembley this year.
Sure. I guess then you can probably understand a little bit, you know, we've struggled at times with soccer in this country. And even though it has continued to slowly build itself up to the point now where, you know, our professional major soccer league here, Major League Soccer, is now going to have 16 teams in it next year, and it's now starting to get a foothold within the sports consciousness, you know, of the United States. Do you ever foresee such a time where American football could have a foothold in the sports consciousness of the United Kingdom?
Well, it's a different situation, isn't it? Because I think that with soccer in the United States, what you do have in the United States population is a large number of immigrants who grew up in other countries playing
right.
soccer,
mm-hmm,
and
right.
therefore you have a large well, if you like, of people who grew up playing that. And obviously, you know, that would have helped when people were introducing the game as a grassroots game for kids. That's less true. Obviously, coming back the other way towards Europe, you know, there's not that sort of immigration. Not a lot of people who grew up playing football, you know, who've been coming over here and sort of spreading the word, if you like. Yeah, I mean, obviously, London is probably one of the cities with the largest American expatriate populations, and there are people playing over there. But possibly, you know, it will take possibly a lot longer, you know, if that ever happens, for American football to have the same, you know, kind of foothold here as soccer, you know, we like to think has over there. It, probably more realistic, you know, is that there will be regular NFL games over here.
So do you even foresee that even on a small level having a professional American football league in the UK in the near future at any time?
I can't foresee it at the moment, simply because the culture doesn't really exist, and you know it would take a long time to build that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd say that the soccer culture was assisted by the number of people who came into the United States,
sure.
you know, already understanding and having grown up in that culture and wanting to play it. And you know, who could have foreseen that there would be regular NFL games in London? You know, well, it probably. In the 1970s, nobody had even heard of the NFL over here. You know, within, 40 years, there we are. You know, we kind of accept that part of the sporting calendar will be an NFL game. And, you know, in a couple of years, maybe two. After that, four. Hey, you know, after that, I don't know. Who knows?
Nick Schepanek from the London Times joining us here inside Patriots Playbook as the Pats get ready for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Wembley Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Obviously, it's got to be a bit of a thrill, I would think, for each of the players on these two respective teams to play in an historical venue like Wembley Stadium. What kind of preparations, what kind of precautions will it be to a typical American football fan? Will it appear to be, do you think, business as usual in terms of the game presentation of American football?
I think it will be. You know, there will be a lot of things that people will find familiar, and I know that the home teams, you know, as it were, have made a big effort to feel like a home game. You know, I remember when the Dolphins played there. You know, there was a Dolphins towel and a Dolphins some Dolphins gear on every seat for you know people to just wave and wear and everything. And there's going to be an enormous tailgate party. It's going to be the largest outdoor event associated with any Wembley occasion. I know they have plans to have all 32 teams represented in one form or another, because I think they're trying to get people, you know, to make a decision about what team they would like to adopt, you know, if there are neutrals there. So I think the other thing that visitors in the United States will see is you know, jerseys from every team represented, because this is, if you like, the annual gathering of the NFL-loving clan, where people, you know, who support every team will be there just to see live NFL. So, you know, if, in a way, you'll see that the a representative of the entire NFL constituency in this country. I mean, that will be, you know, a lot of expats. But there were a lot of people in Britain who got very much into the NFL in the 80s when it first appeared on free television over here. And that was a time when soccer, if you like, was in the doldrums. It seemed drab, violent, uninteresting. And we were suddenly confronted, you know, in all the glory of this fantastically colorful sport from the United States. And everybody, if you like, adopted teams. So you'll find there's an awful lot of people over here who support teams who were big in those days. So you'll find probably proportionately more Dallas Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers, Miami Dolphins fans, you know, than you might expect, simply because, you know, when people started to get interested in the sport in those days, those were the big teams. But the Patriots, of course, were not, you know, the winning franchise that you guys now know. I mean, they were, you know, perhaps, you know, one of the sort of side issues, but obviously a lot of people have kept in touch with the NFL and appreciate, you know, just what it is they're going to be seeing on Sunday in terms of, you know, the team that the Patriots have become.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that how big the tailgate party is going to be. It's almost kind of like the UK's own version of the Super Bowl. And you mentioned that it's almost become routine now that you've come to expect that every October there's going to be an American football game, an NFL game being played there. How big is the following for the actual Super Bowl? How big an event is that over in your country?
Well, it is big. I mean, you know, it may sound a bit of a bit bragging, but I don't know exactly because I'm usually at the Super Bowl. So, you know, I don't. And in fact, the only Super Bowl I've missed recently is the one the Patriots lost.
Oh.
So, if you like, I'm something of a.
So you're the reason.
I've seen the three that they've won. You know, and the one I missed because I think it was what was the US editor who was a Giants fan pulled rank on me on that one, and so I didn't get to go. So blame him, not me, really. You know, I would have been there if I could have.
Okay. The difference
maker. It is. I mean, obviously the problem that there is with the time difference, and that because it has to, you know, it has to kick off in US prime time, that means it's starting at midnight over here. So it has to attract, you know, the dedicated fan who is willing to, you know, explain to his boss, you know, that he only got 3 hours sleep last night on the Monday morning. But you know, the BBC has carried it live. You know, that was a step forward. You know, it's covered on a lot of media. You know, it's on satellite television. So and there will be Super Bowl parties, you know, the length and breadth of the country. You know, the sports cafe and sports bars, you know, will be full on that night. So, but you know, somebody in a rival paper to ours suggested there would be a Super Bowl in London within the next few years. Now, you know, there's so many reasons why that can't happen, in my opinion, you know, and one of the reasons is that, you know, that you would be starting the Super Bowl at midnight local time. You know, what sort of time zone would the players be in at that point? And, and the US media, you know, and last time I looked, Wembley doesn't have a roof. And, you know, for cold weather cities, you know, you have to be able to play indoors. So we're a very, very long way away. And of course, you know, there is a queue of US cities who would believe they had, you know, the rights to hold a Super Bowl a long time before London does, and I'd have to say I agree with that.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this from this perspective, because we've had some fans speculating about this, and we even kind of talked out loud about it for a while because of the NFL's interest in going abroad and trying to expand the product to various global markets. Could you see a time, and could you see the popularity increase enough, specifically in the UK and maybe even in spots like Spain or Germany, where we actually might have a European NFL division?
Division. There were, well, you know, they tried the World League, you know, and NFL Europe. But of course, that was not the, you know, the absolute best product. You know, you'd have to be talking, of course, about expansion teams.
Correct.
And you know, people, there are still people, you know, who regard Major League Baseball as having diluted its, you know, its quality through too many expansion teams. The other factor, of course, as we said, is there are, you know, there are cities in the United States who would, you know, be sure to cry foul if, you know, Frankfurt or London or Madrid got a franchise, you know, when Los Angeles or San Antonio or Portland didn't have one. Mm-hmm. So I believe that the NFL would like to have a more significant presence in, we'll say, London rather than Europe. London obviously has a lot of advantages. You know, Britain is a sports mad country.
Sure.
It has the advantage of a large American population. It has the advantage of being English speaking. So, you know, it's my opinion that they're looking to focus on London. I think there's been all sorts of experiments with, you know, taking the NFL abroad. It's my feeling that London is the city they're focusing on and seeing what can be done. I don't know if there is necessarily, I know that the commissioner has spoken in sort of general terms. I don't know if they've got a target to, you know, of a date when they'd like to try a franchise over here, or whether they'd like to have, you know, teams playing, you know, regularly over here, or sort of guest teams. But, you know, I think they'll see how it goes, and, you know, one day people may dare to say, yeah, a London franchise. Whether that would be an expansion team or whether they'd be looking to move someone over or to have, you know, some teams maybe on the basis of a 17th regular season game playing regularly abroad, you know, or maybe having, you know, one city having four games and another city somewhere else, maybe Spain, as you say, having four games or something. That's something that may be in their minds, but I think it's a long way down the line. I think we have to go up to two games a year and prove that will work. You know, you wonder, are they building, or are people, you know, as I say, taking it for granted? Is it now a regular part of the calendar that people look forward to? Or will there be a time, you know, when maybe Carolina plays Buffalo when they don't sell out? And at that time, that will be a time when they have to think very hard.
Nick, quick question about the Sunday's game, and specifically about Wembley Stadium. We understand that the weather there is a lot like here in New England, where it can change on a dime.
No,
you can,
no snow. No, right, snow.
No snow, maybe, but you could get...
No chance you'll see snow. I will bravely forecast, and it is a brave man who will forecast the English weather, but I say there'll be no snow this on Sunday.
Okay, well, we're going to hold you to that. We've also heard about the field conditions there from players who've played previously at Wembley. And what my question is, I was doing a preview story for our publication for this week, and took some information right from Wembley Stadium's website. One of the interesting facts they had was that the roof itself is 11 acres in size, and four of those are retractable. So my question is, if there's, you know, torrential downpours for the next few days, or even during the day of the game, isn't it possible for them to close up the roof, or no?
No, it's. I was astonished when I went to the new Wembley Stadium for the first time and realised that the roof retracts over some of the seats, but it doesn't actually protect the field at all. It's the most moronic waste of time.
Wow.
It's alleged a true retractable roof. You know, it's possible to have fully retractable roofs, but Wembley, for some reason, doesn't have it. No, if it rains, a lot of people will get wet. I've been rained on in the press box. So,
in the press box?
Yeah. Mind you, I got rained on in the press box at Dolphin Stadium, as it was then known, in the Indianapolis, Chicago Super Bowl. So, you know, being rained on in an NFL game is a new experience for members of press. No, it's, Elise said about that Wembley oversight, the better. But the field wasn't just bad for the... for the Giants and the Dolphins, it was also bad for the England soccer team, and that field has been completely relaid and completely rethought. So, you know, they have that type of turf that has a certain percentage of, you know, plastic grass blades, and we're optimistic that you know, it'll hold up pretty well. I mean, I was over in Foxborough earlier this year and was fortunate enough to stand on the hallowed turf of Gillette Stadium, and it'll be a lot different from that, but. You know, your guys are used to playing, you know, on grass surfaces, and I don't think they'll find it too difficult at all.
Nick, final one from me, and I would ask you, as someone who has observed sport in the UK for a number of years and covered certainly, you know, American sports as well, why you feel like there seems to be such a dedicated group of fans in the UK who follow the Patriots, because we have a huge group of fans that follow our publication, that follow our programming here. I mean, and we're grateful, very grateful. But why do the Patriots seem as popular as they do?
Well, we're a very forgiving nation over here, and we've almost completely forgotten about that Boston Tea Party. And we feel sorry that, you know, you made the gross error of departing from us, and you know, we think that you need to be. I mean, Robert Kraft was over here and during Wimbledon and made himself available for interview, and he claimed that the Patriots have the biggest fan following over here, and he thinks it's something about the, you know, they have this group who are called the Old England Patriots, you know, who are big followers, and he makes sure that when a group of those come over, you know, to New England, that they get tickets. And you know, I have to say that of all the teams who have come over here, and including the team that I personally follow, which is not the Patriots, the Patriots have done most to reach out to the community here. I mean, from Robert Kraft, as I say, making himself available, to, you know, advanced parties of media people coming over here and being very proactive, seeking people out, you know, having a bit of FaceTime, going the extra mile, yard, whatever, to make sure that, you know, their presence is, you know, is announced, and that they're doing all they can to make life helpful for us. I mean, I think that approach by the Patriots, you know, and the organization that they are, that helps. I mean, if there's one team, you know, that's doing a lot to make sure that, you know, with an advance guard, as it were, and being very positive about, you know, making sure that their fans are looked after outside the United States, it's the Patriots. Obviously, people, you know, are keen to hitch up to success, but, you know, the Patriots haven't always been successful, and some of their links in this country do go a long way back.
Sure.
I know Robert Kraft is an Anglophile, and, you know, he's made no secret about that, but, you know, I have to, you know, I tip my hat to the Patriots for being a very classy organization and doing the utmost to help out and make sure that we have everything we need, you know, to cover the Patriots and have all the information. You know, I wouldn't want to, you know, say anything against the Buccaneers, for example, but it's amazing considering that they have ownership, you know, in common with a leading soccer team. But I haven't had a single email or a single contact from the Buccaneers. And yet Stacey James, you know, the director of communications, was over here, I think, June, July last year.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this year, you know, and made a point of getting in touch. And, you know, you have to say that's just symptomatic of the way the mm-hmm. Patriots seem to be run as an organization.
Well, and this is
good luck for them.
This is Tampa's home game, too, technically.
Yeah, well, I think you'll find that there's an awful lot of Patriots support in the stadium, you know, and you can see why that would be.
And which team do you follow for the NFL?
I'm a Dolphins fan.
Oh,
okay.
I had a feeling when he didn't say it the first time. It was
an
AFC East division rival.
I was a little scared, Eric, he's going to say the JETS.
Well, I had a feeling it was going to be one of those two.
I was very, very tempted to wear a Dolphins T-shirt when I was over in Gillette Stadium, but I thought that the Patriots were being such excellent hosts that it would be just the worst of manners to do that.
Well,
and I probably won't even wear one on Sunday. How's that?
All right, good.
We'll let you slide. Nick Schepanek again for the London Times. Nick, thanks so much for sharing your insight and give us a little bit of an idea of what to expect. And I'm sure that the NFL fans in the United Kingdom are more than thrilled to have this opportunity almost be upon you.
Okay. Thanks very much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Nick Schepanek again of the London Times with us here inside the playbook. You know, that's some good insight. And
excellent.
Actually, Eric, a couple of things that, frankly, just was not aware of, concerning the playing surface in Wembley Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And then certainly I think he went out of his way to mention, you know, the kind of organization that, you know, the Patriots are and have been.
Sure.
And that certainly shouldn't come as a surprise to those that follow the Patriots.
But you know what it is? You know what is a surprise? That in this day and age, you have other teams that aren't doing that kind of thing. In the communication age we live in, you would think that's the obvious thing to do. And according to Nick, apparently, it's so few teams are doing it. It just seems so patently obvious that outreach and getting positive coverage for your organization and for the league would be you know, just no-brainers. But apparently not everyone is making that proactive effort.
Wow.
That's what's surprising to me, that other teams aren't doing that.
Yeah, I know. You'd think that's what, you know, PR and, you know, is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
And it's why others don't do it that way. You know, maybe they feel like they've got their own, you know, fish to fry closer to home. I don't know, but, you know, whatever it is, I think it just kind of goes to show you the kind of organization, you know, that exists over here. And,
absolutely.
And I think that's part of the reason why they probably have as many fans as they do, including UK fans. So that's very cool.
It helps that they've been winning.
There's no doubt about that. Winning breeds success. We all know that.
Sure.
And so when this thing, you know, you hope that it doesn't, you know, turn completely back away the way that it was, say, back in the 1970s, largely around here. But at the same time, we know that all things in life and in sport are cyclical. Mm-hmm. And so you wonder how much goodwill you build up over the years and whether or not it can sustain you through the downtimes.
Right.
So that's part of it. And I have to admit, I was going to ask him about the full English breakfast, but I didn't get a chance to. You know, I'm very jealous that you guys get to go. London was a tremendous experience for me and for my family when we went. We had a great time there. So knowing that this will be your first trip into London proper, I think you'll have a blast. And do yourself a favor. At least give the full English breakfast a try.
I'll give it a look. And then, depending on the look, I'll decide if I'll give it a try.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough, I suppose. Well, thanks, as always, for being a part of the program. And I
My
know
pleasure.
You got to scoot because you've got things to do before you guys grab a plane tomorrow.
Yeah.
But we'll expect a full, detailed report from you next week, not only in PFW, but here inside the playbook.
Anxious to give it, John.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric.
All right. We'll see you next week.
You got it. That'll wrap up hour one, even though we've dipped into hour two a little bit for the playbook today. But stick around because we've got a ton still left to go. Got some great emails from some of our UK Patriots fans to share with you. And coming up in 25 minutes, the Professor John Clayton, NFL senior writer for ESPN and ESPN.com, will join us right here in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' three Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Welcome back inside the playbook for Wednesday. I'm John Rook, of course, with you here on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio, Pats, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers getting set to go on Sunday at famed Wembley Stadium. It will be a 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff, so that's approximately, I guess, 6 p.m. local time in London. But the NFL's international series of regular season games returns, as Nick Schapanik from the London Times just mentioned in the last hour. This is something that's going to go on annually, and certainly it's something they look forward to. And the NFL is apparently committed to continuing. And so in that regard, you know, you certainly like to think that if you have a reasonable amount of success and you have a reasonable following and good support, that this is something that could happen again in the future. Just for your own edification, this will be the third consecutive year that the NFL will play a regular season game at Wembley Stadium. In 2008, last year on October the 26th, the Saints beat the Chargers 37-32. They did have a crowd of better than 83,000 at Wembley last year. And then this international series at Wembley began in 2007, as Nick had referred to, when the Giants took on the Miami Dolphins and beat the Dolphins 13-10. So this year you have the Patriots and the Bucks going at each other as they continue this international series. I wish that we could get a little bit more, what's the right word for it, juiced over the fact that, you know, it's a game being played in a historic, stadium, where the scene of many, historic Premiership League games and other, you know, things that have taken place. And I guess Wembley will probably be the main stadium for the 2012 Olympics coming up in London as well in another few years. And so, you know, there's still history to be made in that particular venue. And I almost kind of feel bad that maybe this game won't quite measure up. I mean, let's face it, the Buccaneers are 0-6 here. This is the first time that these two teams will have met since 2005. Patriots beat the Bucs 28-0 in a home game here at Gillette. So, you know, there's not a huge amount of history here between these two teams. And most of it, generally speaking, has been, you know, favorable toward New England. So, you know, you can't do anything about it. There's nothing you can do about it. And my guess is that certainly Tampa Bay is going to show up and play. The one thing the Patriots do need to guard from is to be complacent. I'm guessing that after this last week and what transpired against the Tennessee Titans, that was probably one of the first things that was talked about in the locker room this week. And even though the Patriots are back on top of the division, thanks to, you know, the Jets having lost 3 games in a row, still at 4-2, this team probably doesn't feel like they are where they should be. So I don't think they want to take any chances. They know that, you know, this is an opportunity to get to 5-2, and then you have your off week. And it's something that Eric Scalavino and I have been talking about throughout the first few weeks of the season here, is that, you know, hey, at 5-2 in the bye week, the Patriots are in pretty decent shape. And if you can include with that the fact that you're in sole possession still of first place in the AFC East at the bye week, even at 5-2, yes, you absolutely can live with that, because that's what matters. You know, the division championship gets you into the playoffs. It gets you a home game, period. It may not get you a bye, but, you know, you deal with that on down the line. But you're going to play at home. So that should be every team's goal, you know, division first, and then you worry about the rest of the stuff next, and that's exactly what this Patriots team is going after. You have to feel like this team is at least a little bit closer to what we saw in 2007, prior to, you know, Tom Brady's knee injury and, you know, running through 16 regular season games undefeated, you know, based on what we saw this last week against Tennessee, that, you know, Brady seems to have shaken off a little bit more of the rust. Now, granted, he probably did a lot of this, and this is why I'm not completely and totally psyched. It may not even be the right word to use here. But I'm exercising caution when it comes to saying that Brady is all the way back and that this offense is now all the way back and it's ready to fire on all cylinders. I'm certainly encouraged by the play of the defense. The defense has been better than advertised, in spite of, you know, my claiming at the start of the season that the Richard Seymour trade was a bad move. I'm not sure that, you know, short of this team winning the Super Bowl, I'm not sure that I'll even change my opinion of that, because I really thought that this team was built for a serious run at the Super Bowl. But, you know, this team is also built not only for that, but also with an eye toward the future, and that's the way this franchise has decided to go under Bill Belichick, and you certainly can respect that based on, you know, the recent past. But the defense has performed better than we've all expected, I think, to this stage of the game. So you wonder now, as you get ready to approach the bye week, where this team sort of takes stock of itself and where it can grow and where it can improve from here, which is part of the reason why I found curious the inactive status of a guy like Adalis Thomas last week. And we mentioned this in the opening hour of the program today, if you're just joining us, that he was interviewed for the first time in the locker room today. Eric was right there with him and heard a couple of the cuts, and some of his quotes have to do with, well, Bill makes the decision, it is what it is. And how many times have we heard that one before? Whether you like it or not, I have to live with it. And when asked if he was given a reason for the decision, you know, over his being inactive last week before the Titans game, Thomas said, well, ask Bill. He has all the answers. And I thought at first, when I first heard that, he was just being flip about it, and that maybe there's a little chink in the Patriot way of doing things armor. And then upon further reflection, I'm not so sure that's the case. I think he simply kind of wants to get by this. I think maybe his ego's taking a little bit of a bruising from this. And frankly, you know, you have to have an ego and a pretty strong one at that, I think, to really perform and perform well at this level. And I think that's part of it. He was also asked if he was still happy in New England. And his response was, I'm fine. Read into that whatever you will. I don't know that he necessarily needed a kick in the pants or, you know, a little bit of a motivation factor, but it certainly seems at least to have accomplished that particular task. And I think many of us, when you scrutinize and you analyze this team the way that we all do, whether you're media or just a fan, and we all do it here, I think one of the things that we can all agree upon is that we're a little disappointed in some of the output and the production of alleged playmakers like Thomas, who was brought into here for a few specific reasons. One of them, which, of course, was to get after the quarterback and to apply pressure, and we haven't really seen that from him. So I'll be curious to see, like everybody else, what this week's events will present, you know, to him. And when he gets the opportunity to get in there, whether or not he actually takes advantage of it. You certainly have a guy like, you know, Tully Bantakane back, and, you're going to see this team probably run a lot more 3-4 now that they've also re-signed, Junior Seau and brought him back and got him and his feet wet on Sunday against Tennessee. So some depth issues still existing defensively, we might not see quite as much 4-3, but don't be surprised when they still mix it in, because these guys are now used to it. And that makes the versatility of this defense what really, to me, stands to be one of the most impressive factors. This team can literally go both ways at the drop of a hat. And so now opposing teams like Tampa, who are struggling with their own stuff, much less, you know, trying to get ready for what the other team is going to present them on a week-by-week basis, this just makes it doubly tough for teams to game plan against the Patriots when they don't know exactly what this team is going to do. They have to prepare both ways. And so when you're Tampa and you're looking at this Patriots defense and you're saying, all right, what do we think they're going to do? You have to look at both ways. And so it's evolving. And that to me is a key factor that we're seeing growth. We're seeing evolving. We're seeing different players step up. And we've talked about Brandon Merriweather now being sort of taking over the mantle of some of the emotional leadership on the field, if nothing else. Brandon McGowan has been a huge hit, I think, thus far at safety, to the point now where, I mean, you miss him, but do you notice that James Sanders is not playing? He's hurt. He was inactive last week. But do we really miss him? And I'd have to answer to that, no, because of the play of Brandon McGowan. So, you know, this is all in a positive sense, taking nothing away from James Sanders, who, as we I think we all know, has been developing into a pretty good safety. But, you know, McGowan's becoming more of an impact-type player that we didn't realize, I think, that we had here in New England. You know, Darius Butler has shown some signs of, you know, getting more time at cornerback, and we've seen that. Lee Bodden has been a very good find. Sean Springs has certainly been at least serviceable, if not a little bit better than that. We've seen some emerging play from Gary Guyton, who to me has been one of the great unsung heroes and stories about this team defensively this year. He sort of epitomizes the growth of this New England defense this season because he was asked to step in for Gerard Mayo when Mayo got hurt in the first game. And we haven't really mentioned him. And that to me means he's done his job. He's absolutely done exactly what the Patriots and what everybody has expected of him. And now Guyton is splitting some time in the middle with a guy like, you know, Seau and, you know, on certain, you know, passing downs. And, you know, you're seeing some movement now and you're seeing guys that can, you know, be hooked up on the end. You can see a guy like Derek Burgess even, who has been another one of those that, you know, I wish we could see a little bit more out of the guy. But now that he can maybe come off rush end a little bit more in a more familiar situation for him in a 3-4 as opposed to being a 4-3 down end, that's good. That can only mean good things, I think, in the long run. So I touch in on the defense here just a little bit because, you know, even though it's the offense that I think many of us have been concerned with, and we started to see more of that come together this last week, and again, take it all with a grain of salt because it was Tennessee, a team that I think is clearly ready to lie down on the season, and they certainly lied down in that snow on Sunday in Foxborough. I still want to see that offense do it against a team like, say, Miami in 2.5 weeks when the Dolphins, you know, come here to Foxborough for the next Patriot home game. I want to see, you know, I mean, you have to think that there's a reasonable chance at least of the Patriots offense, you know, clicking again just because you've got an 0-6 team in Tampa this weekend in London. And yes, it'll be fine if they do it, and then you can consider it another step in the right direction, but I want to see them do it against a team that for all rights and reasons is a contender this year. And, you know, Miami's just, you know, they're 2-3 and they're lurking there in the division. So I think you'd have to throw Miami in that boat. And then, of course, after that, then you get the Colts and you get, you know, the Saints and you get the Jets on down the line. So, you know, the November schedule is really going to tell us where this Patriots offense has grown to. And if indeed it is getting closer to the level of performance that it had in 2007, it's picking a heck of a time to get back into gear, because you need it to happen now. But the defense has been a constant. The defense has been the pleasant surprise, and it has been, you know, the story within the story, at least in my opinion. So I look at this game a little bit differently on Sunday. Continue, sure, what you did on offenses last week. See if you can continue that. But you also want to continue to see, you know, this defense learn to become a shutdown, hard to score upon, physical defense. The kind of defense that we all know that a true Super Bowl championship team needs to have in order to be a Super Bowl champion. By the way, you do have some time still to get your emails in for the taped version of the Fantasy Lowdown. Just to bring you up to date on the schedule again, tomorrow from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Eastern time, that will be the Patriots Friday version of Dale and Holly from WEEI and WEEI.com, and we'll simulcast that here on Patriots.com from 10 until 2 tomorrow, so there will be no PFW in progress tomorrow because the guys have to get ready to get on a plane and travel to London. And then I will be here tomorrow from 2 until 4 with a live edition of the playbook from Gillette Stadium, and we'll continue with our normal Thursday show. The Fantasy Lowdown, of course, though, will follow tomorrow at 4 o'clock, but it will be a taped version, and they're going to tape that program today. So if you want to have your fantasy questions for this week's game included, you need to get your questions in by 5 p.m. Eastern time today, and you can send them, of course, to the regular email address, webradio@patriots.com. So I wanted to make sure I passed that along for our friend Brian Lowe, because he's going to tape that program today, and then you'll hear it at the regular time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on Thursday. So that's part of the equation there. All right, let me get to a couple of emails here, and then, again, coming up in 10 minutes, we'll have John Clayton from ESPN and ESPN.com to join us here in the playbook and get his thoughts on the Patriots and the Bucs and the international game and the current state of the National Football League after 6 weeks. And I know many of you know John's work from not only his online presence, but his presence on SportsCenter on ESPN television. This email I read with great interest from Keith in Darby, and he told me to make sure that I pronounced it Darby. It is correct. It's Darby, even though it's pronounced, or even though it's spelled Derby, it's pronounced Darby. So I want to make sure I got that right for you, Keith. But Keith says, John, I've listened to the podcast of Tuesday's show and would like to add my two pennies worth to the discussion about the NFL in Great Britain. I've been following the Pats since 1985 when we bought our first VCR and allowed me to record late-night TV shows for the first time. Back then, American football was broadcast in the early hours of the morning, as it still is, on Channel 4, and we had two good presenters in Nicky Holm and expat John Smith, who gave excellent summaries of the games without baffling those of us who were newbies. John Smith, good guy, right? Former Patriots place kicker. As the season progressed, the Pats began to shine, and I found myself watching the progress more and more. When they won the game after the game on the road, climaxing in the Squish the Fish game at Miami, I was well and truly hooked. I still have the tape of that game. Even their trouncing by the Bears in that year's Super Bowl didn't curb my enthusiasm. Sometimes over the years, it's been hard to find out anything about the Pats, and when the team went into the steep decline in the late 80s, early 90s, they vanished completely. Now we have the internet and brilliant shows like PFW and Progress in the Playbook, so I have a surfeit of Pats news every week. And he says, bliss. Well, we thank you for that, Keith. TV coverage of the NFL has varied enormously in quality, and we've had the sublime to the truly ridiculous in presenters. Today we're quite well served on Channel 5 with Nat Combs and Mike Carlson, although though the channel is not doing as much this year as it had previously. I don't have Sky, but they had broadcast several games each week as well, and I believe their coverage has been reduced this season. I listen to the Pats commentary via Game Pass, so I have the pleasure of the company of Gil and Gino each week, and that's a good call by you, Keith. As to the situation over here, we had a sudden and considerable surge in interest when Channel 4 began to broadcast NFL games in the mid-80s, and there were amateur teams springing up like mushrooms in every corner of the country. That lasted a few years, and the introduction of the World League was greeted with delight in Europe. I went to several London Monarchs games at the old Wembley in 91, including the inaugural World Bowl between the Monarchs and the Barcelona Dragons, but there wasn't the same push by the broadcasters after that, and interest waned again. See, I wonder, Keith, you know, I heard at least initially that, you know, NFL Europe was greeted, you know, with, you know, pretty well by a lot of the fans, certainly the transplants living, you know, in Europe, but, you know, Londoners as well, those who live in UK, Great Britainers, and the media sort of panned it, you know, as an inferior to, you know, well, football, to soccer as we know it. And I wonder if you guys agree or disagree that, you know, hey, media drives a lot of the interest. It does here in the States, and I think most fans here in the United States would also agree with that. Media almost dictates the tempo, much to the chagrin of many fans around here. So I wonder if you think that maybe the media in the UK has sort of held back the NFL, because I always thought that American football was very popular over there. All right, that's just me. Keith continues, the game remains popular amongst its fans, but is most definitely a minority sport here and treated as such by the media. We'll see, I kind of answered my own question there. It doesn't get much coverage in the normal course of things, either in the press or on TV, and we're lucky to get more than a few sentences mentioning at weekend's games, if anything at all. Soccer, rugby, and cricket are the mainstays, of course, with Formula One running them close, especially when a Brit is doing well. And while appreciating that this is a regular season event, so it has to be taken seriously, I don't think the teams have done much to benefit the game by arriving so late in the week and leaving immediately afterwards. Had some of the players or team personalities and their Tampa equivalents been around to appear on TV news programs, it would have given the NFL a much higher national profile, and that's what's missing, in my opinion, and what the game in the UK desperately needs. Wembley is going to be a cauldron, and I'm sure both teams will enjoy what will be a great atmosphere, but I don't think the game will be much more than a nine-day wonder for the uncommitted. Well, that's an interesting point of view, and I think you probably realize, Keith, the reason behind that is simply because these players are creatures of habit, and team officials are loath to get these players out of their, you know, habit during the season for fear that, you know, hey, they'll end up paying for it a week or two on down the line when games are going to continue to count just as much as this weekend's game does. And I think it's part of the reason why, and Nick Schapanik from the London Times mentioned this earlier, I think this is part of the reason why you have people like Stacey James of the Patriots as their PR director go to London and see what he can't do in advance of the game to help sort of advance the cause. And I should mention that when the team does get there, and will take most of the day tomorrow to travel, on Friday they do have several things planned. So, you know, you'll get a quick fix of it and a dose of it, you know, on Friday and Saturday in terms of publicity, perhaps on the UK television stations. But it won't be a week's worth of buildup, kind of like, you know, you might see for the Super Bowl or something along like that. So, at any rate, Keith, a very well thought out and a very interesting email, and I thank you for taking the time to write it, and I wanted to share it not only with all of our fans, but especially with those in the UK as well, and find out if you feel likewise. Webradio@patriots.com is, of course, the email address. That's how you reach us here in the playbook. All right, let's take another time out, and then on the other side, we're going to get to the professor, John Clayton, senior writer, NFL senior writer for ESPN and ESPN.com. He's coming up inside the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook again for a Wednesday. I'm John Rook, and very happy to be joined by the one and only professor, NFL senior writer for ESPN and ESPN.com, John Clayton. John, it's great to visit with you in this particular format because I know we get to do some things on ESPN radio from time to time. But thank you and welcome to my world inside the playbook.
It's good to be in the playbook. Sorry we didn't get together when I was at New England a couple weeks ago because you were busy, I was busy, so at least we'll get to share time now.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for taking a few minutes of time to visit with our fans here. The first question I have has to do with the trade season. There was a lot of bluster, and yet obviously very little activity came through. Why should we be surprised by that?
We shouldn't, because, I mean, it's really been that way for, I'd say, 30, 35 years. You know, it's unlike baseball where you almost have to have a special on television when the trade deadline comes and a clock ticking and all those different things, a little bit the same way with basketball and hockey. But the problem in football, it used to be because of the cap. It's not because of the cap anymore, because everybody has enough cap room that they could do whatever they want to do. But I think most teams just are reluctant to try to add too many players that might be coming in when they don't have a training camp to at least try to at least get up to speed on what they're going to do. Because a lot of times, you know, you pick up a player off the street, yeah, unless there's a serious injury, he usually sits around and doesn't do anything unless he's get a chance to move up with injury. So, and also, general managers don't want to look bad, because sometimes it's better not to make a move, because you can criticize if you do make a move and it doesn't work out. So there's just more of a reluctance to try to make trades in this league. It was a busy trade season. There were 66 trades and 54 players over the course of time. But as you get into the season, you know, everybody kind of likes their set rosters and don't make too many deals.
Obviously, the biggest names in terms of the trading season were concerned. Jay Cutler went off to Chicago, and Kellen Winslow, who, of course, the Patriots will face this weekend, went off to Tampa, which was a little different. And, of course, the Patriots were involved in a couple as well, Matt Cassel and Mike Vrabel going out to Kansas City.
Yeah, and you know, there was a little bit more, I think, of valued trades, because there was about maybe seven or eight that involved second-round picks or first-round picks. And normally there's not going to be that many. It's like a lot of times when you're shopping a player, you almost have to, if he's a first-round pick, you almost have to take a fourth or a fifth-round pick. But, you know, big names, Braylon Edwards, I mean, he goes for a three and a five and two players. And the fact that even Gaines Adams, right close to the end of the trade deadlines, goes from Tampa Bay up to Chicago for a second-round pick. You know, a lot of movement. I thought of all the teams, the Jets did about as well in the trade market as anybody else, because they were able to get a quarterback moving up from 17 to 5 to get Mark Sanchez. They were able to get Braylon Edwards and Lito Shepard. And in the end, for those three players at three key positions, they didn't have to surrender a first-round pick. They basically gave about a handful of draft choices and about five players. So I think overall they did pretty well as far as upgrading some key parts of their team, maybe better than any other team in the league.
John, how would you rate the Patriots' trade of Richard Seymour to Oakland?
Steal. I mean, it's like, honestly, I think that you know, the SEC should investigate that one, because, you know, Seymour, let's put it this way, Seymour can still play. And if you watched how dominating he's been in his first game in Oakland and also last week, I mean, he can still make some big plays. But to give up a first-round pick in 2011, along with the fact that Seymour doesn't have a contract next year and could leave in free agency, and seeing if he decides that the Raiders aren't the best team to stay with, all of a sudden, you know, they get nothing. They get, what, 16 games on a bad season? That, to me, SEC should look at that one. It's very one-sided to the Patriots.
Sure. All right. Through 6 weeks now, as we get ready to go through to week number 7 in the NFL, what has really stood out to you? What has been different? What has been a surprise in a positive and a surprise in a negative sense, something that you didn't expect?
Well, just the play of the quarterbacks. I mean, and it's been evolving now for about the last 4 or 5 years. But I still, and I know Steve Mariucci on the NFL Network has been saying it, and other people have been saying it too, this is the deepest and the best I've seen quarterback play in this league maybe ever. I mean, you know, it's we're at big numbers as far as 61 and change, as far as completion percentage. But if you look around, what amazes me is that the evolution of the two-minute offense, the no-huddle offense, and how in fourth quarters quarterbacks can go back and forth, up and down the field, regardless of the shortness of time that they may have possessions. I mean, it's like every week, and, you know, like in the last 2 weeks, I went to Cincinnati and Baltimore, and, you know, one drive, and then, of course, here comes a big drive by Carson Palmer. I was at the Minnesota game against Baltimore last week, and Joe Flacco was able to rally from a 17-point deficit in the fourth quarter, take the lead. Then Brett Favre hits a 58-yard pass, you know, all of a sudden setting a game-winning field goal. Well, here's Flacco marching back, and they were set up for a 44-yard field goal that missed. You see it every week. There's 4 to 5 to 6 games every week that you have back-and-forth quarterback play. That, to me, is the surprising, pleasant thing. The disappointment is Tennessee. How do you go from 13 wins to 0-6 and not even look like you can function as a team? That is disappointing.
as far as the quarterbacks are concerned, why do you feel like the quarterbacks have evolved as they are? Is it because they're better trained coming in? Are the colleges doing a better job of preparing them? Are quarterback performances, say, from guys like Manning and Brady, putting the onus on some of the younger guys to get better quicker?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because, you know, the spread offense is almost a deterrent for a quick transfer into the NFL as far as success, because the spread offense in college is so different from what you have in the pros. But I do think that it is now bringing quarterbacks their mindset and their styles that can make a quick transition and do well in this league. You know, the one thing that I think that is evolving, because, you know, the running quarterback phase was about 4 or 5 years ago, mm-hmm. where, you know, you can maybe try to pick up that third down with a run. Well, now defenses are so fast, that's neutralizing that. What you need is that quarterback in the pocket, like a Tom Brady, that can get rid of the ball quickly and have a slide step and then move it. Well, now more quarterbacks are able to do that, and that's possibly because of the spread set. There's some contention that because, you know, most quarterbacks now play video games, that the decision-making is, you know, that much quicker. Well, regardless, I mean, there's going to be mistakes of quarterbacks and not make it in this league, but I think what you're seeing is that a style of quarterback that can work out a 3 and 5 step drops, can work out a shotgun, make quick decisions, and get the ball to 3, 4, 5 receivers in any kind of given drive. I mean, I just think that we're seeing a good phase that's working well for this league.
John, two NFL-related questions for you here. Number one, what are your thoughts on what we've seen as far as roughing the passer and or taunting penalties this year? We've seen an increase of them, and we've seen the willingness to throw the flag on some particular plays that you really question whether or not the flag should be thrown. We've heard even Rodney Harrison come out on Football Night in America and tell Tom Brady to take off the skirt. What are your thoughts here?
Well, you know, and I go back because I was in the locker room covering the Steelers when Jack Lambert first gave the first skirt reference to quarterbacks and the same thing. So it's something that's been around, and it's never going to get better for defensive players. In fact, it's always going to get worse because now with bigger bodies, you know, faster players, and the fact that they can go for the knees, you know, you're going to see, you know, there's more damage to quarterbacks, and this league is quarterback driven. And so it may not look like football, it may not be fair, but there's a lot of things for the safety of this sport and for the safety of the players have to be done that may not look like football. I mean, for example, there was a big ruckus in the offseason about wedge busting, you know, no longer having the wedge. It's like, what are you, we're taking out a staple of football. Well, if you look at some of the plays that, you know, have gotten out guys with bad necks, concussions, then you look at that and you say, wait a second, they should do what they did and outlaw it. Same thing with quarterbacks. I mean, do you want to see another hit on Tom Brady around the knees that knocks him out like last year? Do you want to see a Carson Palmer hit like Kimo von Olhoffen? No, you want to see the quarterbacks perform at their best. And so it may betray the idea of football, but the end result is, you know, you have to do it to protect these quarterbacks. It's not may not be fair for defensive players, but it's also not fair for fans not to see their best quarterbacks out there.
Second NFL question I have to do has to do with the fact that this is the third year for this international game being played at Wembley Stadium in London. Of course, the Patriots and the Bucks have it this Sunday. And whether or not you think that this is past the experimental stage, do you think this is going to be a fixture now in the National Football League?
Oh, yeah, there's no question it's going to be a fixture. The question is how much more will it be able to draw? Because, you know, the idea now is that there's one game and, you know, they want to try to maybe have a second game. And ultimately, I think they'd love to be able to put a franchise over in London. They want to try to do China. You know, Patriots were involved in that one game that was supposed to go to China with Seattle, but they just couldn't get enough interest over there. They want to grow the brand over in Europe, and any opportunity to do that, they're going to try to do it, and they have people in the NFL office that are going to be aggressive in doing it. You know, from the player standpoint and from the team standpoint, it's kind of it's a necessary nuisance because it really disrupts a tight schedule, but, you know, for the betterment, I guess, of the overall marketing of the league, it's something that is going to continue to happen and continue to grow. And ultimately, I know what the goal would be, to have an 18-game schedule where they can maybe have 16 games overseas. I don't think that would happen anytime in the next 20 years, but that would be what they're trying to evolve to. They'd love to be able to take as many games overseas as possible to try to get the brand even bigger.
Could you actually see the evolving of a European division?
I don't think so, because right now the European division would only be a team in London and maybe 3 or 4 teams in Germany. I don't know if there was.
Didn't Barcelona support NFL Europe?
They did. Yeah, Barcelona did. It basically would be kind of a resurrection of NFL Europe, you know, and that became too much of a loss leader. You know, it was basically put out there to develop quarterbacks, and in the end, it developed third-string quarterbacks. Early when there was a quarterback drought, it did do a good job of getting some quarterbacks into the league faster, but now, you know, it became a little bit, you know, $50 million a year. That was what the loss was, and, you know, owners didn't want to front it anymore. But I would have to think it would still be hard, because if you're going to go into soccer stadiums over there and try to compete with soccer, you have to have top brands of football, not necessarily exhibition football or at least developmental football.
Sure. I'd be remiss then, John, if I didn't ask you a little bit about the game this weekend. Patriots are coming off, obviously, a record-setting performance that, you know, threw everybody for a loop here, that's for certain, and probably in Tennessee as well. And just a real statistical oddity, I don't even know if it's occurred to you, but the first 5 weeks the Patriots played undefeated teams, each of those weeks. Now this is the second straight week that they've played a winless team.
Well, let's put it this way. I know in soccer they like to call it friendlies. This is not going to be a friendly. Tampa Bay's terrible. I mean, they are really bad. Their defense, you know, they do have some offensive talent. There's no question. You know, Kellen Winslow, Antonio Bryant. They've got decent running backs and a very good offensive line, but their defense is in total transition, and there's so many holes in that defense that, you know, it would not surprise me if it's another 59-0 game. I mean, they are struggling that much. I mean, this is one where, you know, to hold down the score, I would have to think Tampa Bay's got to hope for snow in London, which you know is not going to happen.
Wow.
This is not going to be a close game. But trust me on this. This is one where Brian Hoying will be playing sometime in the fourth quarter.
How long does Raheem Morris get to right the ship?
Good question. Very good question, because this, you know, it's the game when they come back against, I think, I don't know if they play, whatever it is, there's a lot of people that have played them that think this could be the repeat of Detroit.
Really?
Oh, they look down the line and they don't see many wins. If they don't see any wins, as a matter of fact. So, you know, you figure that you're not going to have a Detroit season again. You would think not. But, you know, this Tampa Bay team very well would be lucky to get two wins or three wins the rest of the season. You know, and that certainly would leave Raheem up for judgment. You know, because remember, he brought in Jeff Jagodzinski and, you know, didn't even get him to the first game of the regular season. That didn't work out. You know, I think everybody loves Raheem. You know, he's exuberant. He's smart. You know, he's a bright coach. Everybody realized that he was a rising star in this league, but also, too, he's just on a team right now. It's really caught in a bad transition, and it would not surprise me if he's one and done.
What do you think is the main difference of a young guy like Raheem Morris and a young guy like Josh McDaniels, who seems to be having all the success in Denver? That tells me at least a little bit that maybe Mike Shanahan didn't exactly leave the cupboard bare.
No, and I think also, too, I mean, I think you have to credit Josh. I mean, even though he stumbled around with some very controversial decisions, everything worked out. I think first, you know, he made a brilliant hire in Mike Nolan. Mike Nolan has come in and I think has done the single best job a defensive coordinator in a turnaround situation may have done in years. I mean, eight new starters on defense, and their halftime adjustments are the best in the league, or at least rated among the best in the league. They went three games and didn't give up a third down conversion in the second half of three consecutive games. That's unthinkable. That's how good that is. And then, obviously, Josh has a great flair for calling plays and, you know, working the offense and making halftime adjustments himself. And so, you know, that's worked out. And I'm not knocking the coaching of Tampa Bay, but let's put it this way. The cupboard was a little bit better. You know, there was a better offensive line in Denver. They did have a decent running – well, they did revamp the running game, so they upgraded that. Orton has done a decent job at quarterback. And let's put it this way. They had great receivers. Brandon Marshall, they had Brandon Stokley, you know, Eddie Royal. They were pretty well set there. But I think the big thing was – they were able to turn around the defense much quicker than Tampa Bay, and that's why they're sitting at 6-0 and Tampa Bay's sitting at 0-6.
John, finally, your thoughts on the Patriots and how this team has developed. And it's clear that we've seen Tom Brady have to knock off quite a bit of rust on offense, and maybe some of the key offensive performers are beginning to work themselves into some injury situations. But we all kind of feel like the defense has been a huge surprise, and I kind of like your look from afar and what you think of the Patriots' chances of continued improvement.
Well, I mean, I thought all along they were going to win the division as long as Tom Brady stays healthy, and I think that they're on pace to be able to do that. I still think that this is a team that's in defensive transition and has the advantage of having Tom Brady and the offensive weapons to at least make that an easier transition, because I still think the motto is get as many offensive plays on the field as possible to eat up the clock and give it enough time for the defense. I mean, that's certainly worked against the unbeaten teams. You know, the fact that at one point they were sitting there with 75 offensive plays and 49 defensive plays. Well, unless they were giving up 7 yards a play or so, they weren't going to have many 300-yard games. So I think that, you know, it's bought time for the defense to try to find its personality. And I still think the defense is, you know, struggling to figure out which way it wants to be. Last week it went back to a 3-4 defense. Mm-hmm. And you can see now that's going to be the plan for the next several weeks. You know, they've tried to restock the linebacking core, Junior Seau coming in as a backup. You know, now they're, trying to filter out what they want to do at the outside linebacker position. Fortunately, they're solid on the defensive line, and each week this kind of mix and match as far as the secondary. But, you know, again, it's a typical Bill Belichick coaching job. You know, he's still tinkering. He still hasn't got it the way he wants it yet. He still has time to do it. But as long as he has Tom Brady in that offense, he has time.
John, it's been great to visit with you. Thanks for spending a little time with us today. And hopefully we'll see you on the trail again somewhere soon.
Thanks, John.
You got it. John Clayton. NFL senior writer for ESPN.com, and by the way, he's also a Pro Football Hall of Fame McCann Award winner for what they call distinguished reporting. So the guy obviously has a lot of cred, a lot of street cred around the NFL, and I'm glad that he could spend a little time with us here inside the playbook today. Let's wrap up the program today by sharing some of the emails that you've taken the time to write into the program today. This one comes from James from the UK, who says, John, I've been a Pats fan since 1997 and Super Bowl 31. First time I'd ever watched a game and instantly became a fan of it. Was a big fan of Drew Bledsoe, and I think it's shameless how some fans now perceive him. In my opinion, he was great. Yes, he wasn't as good as a Brady, but you are comparing him to arguably the best ever. Coverage over here in the UK is unfortunately not what it should be. My hope is that having Tom Brady put on a real show will make more people interested. Yes, the NFL will never compete with football or soccer over here, but there is certainly a market for it. I went to the last game at Wembley. Can't wait for Sunday. He says, I have a question about what you talked about yesterday in running up the score. Does this running up the score issue come up a lot in American sport? I've seen some of the most one-sided contests in professional football, soccer, rugby, hockey games over here to the point where it was embarrassing for the losing team to be on the pitch, and I've seen it in multiple countries. Not until the 07 Pats season had I ever heard of running up the score. For a society which seems to be predicated on giving your opponent a kicking, whether it's your business, your awards, or the size of your car, why does this idea exist at all in sport? I simply don't understand. Did the Titans go back to their mummies and cry and say, Mommy, the Patriots ran the score up on us? Good. That's good. I like that. You know, I think it's all has to do. Very good email. Thank you. Thank you for that, James. Yeah. It's just a macho mentality here, to be honest with you. And that, you know, people appreciate and support and get on the bandwagon of a team that shows no mercy. They want to be associated with somebody who has a killer instinct. And I think that's largely been the case for as long as I can remember, and obviously having grown up here and followed sports professionally as a reporter for the better part of the last 30 years, I can't ever remember anybody following a team just for, frankly, the sheer fun of it. Especially, and I think it's part of the reason why I came to Boston and came to New England to cover after spending most of my early years in Texas, appreciated the passion of Boston and even New York sports fans. And always wanted to work in a place and in an area where, you know, fans lived and died with the fortunes of their team. And I think we have more of that here than you do in other pockets in the United States. And it's been an interesting experience. And I just think fans treat it differently here. And a lot of that is because of the success or lack thereof, I think, over the years of the Boston Red Sox. Red Sox were, has-beens, never-wases, hapless, couldn't ever win, went 86 years between championships. And I think that sort of developed that culture of, had a lot to do with developing the culture of, all right, when you have them down, let's step on them and not let them back up. And I think that's just part of the way that it's been. This one comes from Gary. who says, guys, love the station. He's, and he's from England. You'll have a great time in London. It's very safe, lots to do. We welcome you to England. Want to see your team play the football that we know you can play. The stadium will rock. It's going to be awesome. You'll see every team's jerseys worn at the game. I'm a Raiders fan, but no jokes, please. We all want to see NFL. 90,000 fans will give you a great welcome. He says, by the way, the temperature is 58 just outside of London in Watford. All right, Gary, thank you for chiming in on that one. You're right, no Raiders jokes. But I think it's great, though, that NFL fans from all the teams are going to turn out for this game on Sunday. That's the way it probably should be, I think. He said, in fact, he sent another note here, and he said the roof on the Wembley Stadium is not retractable. It covers most of the pitch, and I think that's something that Nick Schapanik from the London Times did refer to. Here's James, who says, guys, I'm a Pats fan of 28 years from Sheffield, England, which is 170 miles out of London. I'm looking forward to attending my first Patriots game, especially after the appetizer of my first ever NFL game last year with the Saints against the Chargers in London. I'll be staying over in London for two nights. We'll be attending the tailgate party, the big one that was referred to, at 11 a.m., and then taking in the full NFL experience. Can't wait. May I say, Tampa, we're very generous in giving a home game up, and we'll find most of the crowd will be Pats fans. That doesn't surprise me. I don't think it surprises anybody, at least at this stage. Gene from Daytona says, John, I live in Daytona Beach, watch all the Tampa Bucks games. I'm a lifelong Pats fan from Somerset, Mass. Listen in every week. This game will not be like the Titans game. The young quarterback, Josh Johnson, playing very well, and he should have started out the season. I'm worried about this game, though. Johnson runs well from the pocket, and Cadillac Williams is running like a madman. The only thing that could bother the Bucs is an outside rush and a quick lead for the Patriots, get them down quickly, and then forces them out of their game plan. The Bucs' defensive backs are playing well. I believe that if it is a rainy day and bad field conditions, that'll help the Patriots. The receivers will do well and possibly a large scoring day for Tom. He says, I grew up on Portuguese blood pudding as a kid. Ooh, another fan of blood pudding. Let me get this straight. I'm not a fan of blood pudding. I make fun of myself in this particular instance because when I tried my first full English breakfast, as we were talking about in the opening hour here, and I know UK fans will probably be snickering on this one, I had no idea what blood pudding was. And to me, it looked like it came, you know, in those little molds, and it looked like a piece of what we would call, you know, breakfast sausage, you know, a flat sausage-type, you know, pancake-type thing. And so I just dug right in. I thought it was a piece of sausage. And, you know, when I ate it, my, you know, stepfather, who is, you know, my stepfather-in-law, I should say, who is English, and he's from Hull, Hull City is who he's followed in the past, he looked at me kind of quizzically. And he said, so what do you think? And, you know, I kind of like, well, you know, it's got an odd flavor to it. It's odd. It doesn't really taste much like sausage. And he laughed. And he said, well, that's because it isn't. And he said, nobody was going to tell you what it was because we wanted to see if you would eat it. And then, obviously, it's a mixture of pig's blood and all kinds of things. And I'm just, you know, like, okay, I don't think I really want this anymore. But I, yeah, but it, you know, is something that is, you know, that obviously well-known in Britain. And I tried it, okay? I tried it. Can't say I'm a huge fan. Everything else, though. Everything else, including the beans and everything else, huge fan of the full English breakfast. I just don't think you'll find me doing the blood pudding thing too much more. So anyway, there you go. And here we go with James, who says, hey, don't knock our full English breakfast. Bacon, sausage, fried egg, mushrooms, beans, tomatoes, toast, and black pudding. Mmm. James, like I said, I love all of it except the black pudding. Okay? So don't kill me for that. I feel like that's pretty good, you know. I mean, like I've told you before, I have English roots. You know, my family is generally from the, we've been able to trace it somewhat back to the Liverpool area. So, hey, don't knock me. I don't know anybody from there. My family's been in this country now since the early 1800s. So we're going way back to our roots. But as far back as we've been able to go, we think they come from generally the Liverpool area. So anyway, Rook. My last name, R-O-O-K-E, is akin to those who would have the surname of Rook, R-O-O-K, in the U.K. So there you go. And here's my friend Irene in Tampa. Outstanding, Irene. What's that, Jason? Okay, good. Let's see if it gets here on time. There it comes. All right. She says, John, I really enjoyed the interview you conducted with Steve Holder from the St. Pete Times. I often read his columns, and they're often insightful and not full of rants, like some of his fellow columnists who, in today's paper, call Belichick a jerk for running up the score on Sunday. Wow. This columnist went on to further rehash the Spygate ordeal to make his point. Living here in Tampa and as a football fan, not a Bucs fan, I consistently hear how the Bucs management has failed to first be honest that is a rebuilding year, and secondly, with that thought in mind, become a more fan-friendly so there wouldn't be 20,000 empty seats like last week's game. You spoke earlier of the Pats' ability to withstand the downtime. Should the team not do well for a year or two, and I think that is in this case, the Bucs haven't done a very good job at holding onto the fan base they once had. It started last year and has just gone downhill from there. Fans will hang in there, but they just don't want to be told one thing, and then everything else, like trades and cuts and so forth, is pointed in the opposite direction. As for us, we're hosting a huge football party this Sunday. With me being greatly outnumbered, I'm planning to talk much crap, which I usually never do, and truly enjoy this game. I am excited. Yes, Irene, I did have a good time when I was in town, by the way. Ybor City is one of my favorite spots to go to in Tampa, and the Columbia restaurant in particular, outstanding. So thank you for keeping things the same. That is one place I never want to have change. So thank you for that. And the walk-in humidors are also good there, too. Like that a lot. And then here we go. Mike says, John, great show. Keep up the good work. With Julian Edelman out, what do you think the Pats will do at the wide receiver position? Who has a better chance on making it, Brandon Tate or Terrence Nunn? We sort of surmised a little bit about that earlier in the program, Mike, and I would tell you that at least from all practical appearances, based on who we've seen in the practice field, it'd probably be Brandon Tate. Now, granted, the Patriots have 21 days to decide whether or not to fully activate him or put him on IR for the rest of the year. But he was out of practice. I don't know that they activate him in time for this week. They may still be looking at him, you know, and trying to evaluate. So in that particular instance, don't be stunned if you see Terrence Nunn being added here. Obviously, a move has to be made because right now you technically have three healthy receivers. We might find out a little bit more, if not later tonight, then certainly by showtime tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be able to fill you in. But I'd say right now, with Tate still amongst the evaluation process, I'd say none. But then again, who knows? They might pull the trigger on Tate, too. Hope that answers your question.
We got to tell Mikey Vandalism that he should start sending us the MP3 emails that he sends to PFW.
Really? So, Mikey, what kind of MP3s are you sending to PFW?
He records his question. They're always premium quality, and we all get a good kick at him, so we should start sending the MP3s to Playbook also.
Well, there you go, Mikey. You know, you've just been called out by the doctor here, all right? You need to start sending us your questions on MP3, and we'll play them on an MP3 file, and we'll play them right here. Be cool. In fact, you know, that can happen just about any time, right?
I mean, we'll take them.
We accept phone calls. Obviously, we push the 508-543-7482 phone number all the time in addition to the web address. So if you want to record your question, send it via MP3 to webradio@patriots.com, do it. Why not? It's your own little, like, mini podcast here, right? All right, before we wrap it up here, Christina is around for Shop Talk coming up next. Right, Christina? I'm not hearing, Jason.
She needs a minute.
Oh, okay, she needs a minute. That's fine. Good. Well, then I'll tell you what. We'll let her have the minute, and then what we'll do here is let you know about tomorrow's show, which will be Roy Cummings from the Tampa Tribune, who will join us inside the playbook. And, of course, as he usually does on Thursdays, the one and only Russell S. Baxter from ESPN and the ESPN family of networks.
Baxter!
I always love that. And then he will join us in our second hour tomorrow to go over the Week 7 schedule in the NFL. And as we said, even though PFW will not be on this air tomorrow from 10 to 2, they're going to have the Patriots Friday version of from Dale and Holly. We will be here with the playbook tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah, baby. So we're going to do it as usual. The guys get on the airplane to head over to London. Now, Christina, where are you?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm running a little late today. Jason didn't give me a heads up, but I'm ready to go. What's going on, John?
Oh, yeah, let's all blame it on Wednesday Jason. Every week, right?
Let's just all blame it on Jason.
Let's do that. Why not? It's easy.
It's convenient. Yes, that's true. What's up with you today?
Not much. Can't believe the days are almost over. But, you know, gearing up for London. We've got some people going over there. We're going to be doing the show from over there on Friday. We'll have some stuff Saturday, cool. Sunday. And I'm sure the guys from Shop Top Talk right now have plenty of gear to get going over there.
Awesome.
Across the pond.
Awesome. Sounds like a plan. All right, we'll let you get to it, and I'll say goodbye. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you,
have a
John.
Safe trip yourself.
Thank you. You too.
You got it. All right. Christina Acra coming up with Shop Talk here momentarily. And again, we're here same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, manana, kids.